All right, guys. So we've got a lot of questions on the blog and in the customer forum and things like that. People asking questions about how much food it actually takes to build muscle, not necessarily protein, but just food in general. Because you've got a lot of let's call it rhetoric going around saying that you have to stuff your face with 4,000 to 6,000 calories a day or whatever to build muscle. And so we're going to kind of put that to rest. So we've got John on the phone. And he's going to get a little science-y on you and talk about this. And I think we can go from there. What do you say, bud?
All right, let's get at it.
You would go for it.
Okay, so the question keeps coming up, and there's a debate about it as how much calories you need to build muscle. Can you do it just at caloric maintenance? Like, okay, so your resting metabolic rate, or just the amount of calories you need to not gain any fat or to not lose any weight, but just to be how you are every day. The question usually is how much more than that amount of calories do you need to build muscle? Because right off the bat, there's a problem with that because there's an assumption that you actually need more calories. Now, the old bodybuilding lore or just the bodybuilding kind of style is to eat massive amounts of calories, put on body fat as well as, however much muscle you might be putting on, and then at some future point, to diet down, so getting rid of the fat, and then just revealing whatever muscle, quote, muscle you built. Now, there's a few flaws in that logic. First of all, there's actually no scientific evidence that we could find that really identifies how many calories extra than your resting metabolic rate, if any amount of calories extra at all, are needed to build muscle. And part of the problem is I think guys assume they can build more muscle than they actually can. And that gets even deeper into misinterpreting how big and how much 1 or 2 pounds of extra muscle actually looks like or how big it actually is. The bodybuilding industry kind of skews all of that, partly with drugs and partly with just outrageous claims made by different, supplement companies and even people selling workouts saying that you can put on 30, 40, 50 pounds. I don't even care what time frame they say that's possible in, that's just not possible. So people have all of these expectations that probably can never be met, but want them to be met. So they just come up with some kind of way of just getting bigger and getting heavier. And one of the things is to just massively overeat calories. But we can't really prove that really does anything besides make you fat. Brad, a colleague of ours, he actually had access to a metabolic body composition lab for a long time, and he did some research where guys did a typical bulk up phase where they ate like a massive excess of calories, like tons of protein, tons of calories. They take all their supplements, and all they did was go up 20 pounds of fat, and when they dieted down for their competition, they just took that same 20 pounds of fat back off, and they were right back where they started. And these were seasoned, experienced weight training guys who were, who'd been weight training for years, who'd competed before and were competing again. And their entire bulk up and cut down was purely just fat bulking up and the same fat coming back off. So the answer we came up with, like, why would you put yourself through that if all you do is end up with the same muscle you had before? So I kind of guess I threw a lot of information there. Brad, why don't you guide me here and kind of let's drill down to some more top points in there that you think need more explanation.
Okay, well, let's talk about, we've talked about juvenile muscle growth before and how that, let's tie calories in with that because, that may be, I don't know, you tell me, would that be different for a guy, let's say that's 20 years old who hasn't finished filling out? If he ate more calories, would that actually help him grow more muscle because maybe his body's needing more calories at the time overall? Or are we, obviously after that period's over, would that change? Is there kind of like a cutoff? Does that make sense?
Yeah. Okay. So what you're referring to is juvenile muscle growth. That's the muscle growth you're getting, when you're in your late teens and early 20s, just from growing bigger. Like you're still not your full size yet. So, it's kind of like when you have a dog, you're like, well, when it's 3 months old, it's like, well, how big is this thing going to be? And you're like, oh, it'll be, whatever. If it's a Rottweiler, you're like, oh, it'll be about 100 pounds. And it's funny that with humans, we're the only animal where we're like, well, how big are you when you're full grown? It's like, oh, I don't know. You might be 250. You might be, 170. It's, we actually have a very specific range of sizes we'd end up being. So juvenile muscle growth is the growth you get, is the muscle growth you get just from when you go from puberty to being an adult. And that growth, that growth is mixed with, everything else in your body is growing too, your bones, your organs, like everything. So there's a metabolic cost to all of that stuff growing. Once you're fully grown, your organs and stuff aren't growing anymore. Your bones aren't growing anymore. The only thing you can do is mechanical muscle growth, which mechanical muscle growth is just the growth you force with exercise, or weight training. So there may be a situation, you know, like when you were 19 or 20, it seemed like you could eat anything under the sun and not gain any weight or not gain any fat mass. And you know, weight gaining was a trick, and it didn't matter how much you ate, it would seem like you wouldn't gain. It's really hard to tell what's going on there, but what I would guess is that the juvenile muscle growth and the fact that your organs are still growing and your bones are still growing, like in general, your entire body's still growing. Maybe that's where you're burning up a lot more calories. Plus, the other thing is you probably have a more active lifestyle when you're younger, and that's something you just may not even have noticed. And when you get older, you're not as active either. So unless you didn't experiment with a bunch of people for 20 years across their entire life, you would be really hard to tell what's the difference there. So I don't think you can compare how much you ate 10 years ago or however old you are, when you're 15 to when you're 19 to when you're 25 to when you're 30. I don't think you can compare, assuming you're working out all the way through there, I don't think you can compare how many calories you ate in your late teens to your early 20s to your mid 20s to your late 20s and in 30s and all the way up. Using yourself as a comparison, as a control, there's specific amounts of calories you can eat at certain moments of your life, it seems like. And then that changes along with your lifestyle and the type of growth you're going through. So obviously you only get juvenile muscle growth in your late teens to your mid 20s. And that's that extra growth you're getting just from still filling out and filling into your body. And once that's over, it would seem as though you could actually eat even less calories without putting on weight. And it doesn't seem like that muscle growth necessarily requires a lot of extra calories either. If we just thought that, let's say we were going to put on let's say we tried to put on 5 pounds of muscle in a year, which is actually a lot in a year. When you break that down to how much muscle gain that is per day, it's just like a few grams. And that's not really that much extra food if all you're doing is adding a gram or, you know, a couple of grams to your overall body weight. And it doesn't seem that the metabolic cost of building muscle itself is all that costly either. Because it happens so slow, and like we said, it's just so tiny. I mean, that's just a drop in the bucket compared to all the other metabolic processes that are going on in your body. So it would seem that you don't really need a massive excess of calories to grow your muscles. Now, you do need a massive excess of calories to get heavier, but most of that extra weight is fat and water retention. So I think guys get confused between muscle growth and body weight. Body weight and muscle growth are not synonymous. There's no, I mean, you can have bigger muscles without being that much heavier. But we all know you can get as heavy as you want if you just keep eating, but that's just all going to be fat mass.
Right. So what would be some practical, you know, because I mean, a lot of, like me and, you know, most guys, we're not going to want to sit down and try to calculate how much we're going to eat and all that stuff like that. And most of us are going to want to eat as much as we can. I mean, what are some practical things that we could do to, you know, make sure that, you know, we're eating whatever, you know, eating enough to, let's just call it eating, no matter your age, right? So even if we're going to kind of make some guesstimations, even if people that are younger, what would be some practical things to do to make sure that you just weren't getting fat?
Do your measurements. Do a bunch of standard measurements. And so most guys will store, the body fat will mostly store around their waist. There's obviously a layer of fat all over your body, but I mean, like for instance, there's actually a thin layer of fat even in the back of your hand. It's just so thin you'd never see it, right? But then it's clearly that layer of fat gets thicker the closer you get to the middle of your body, and it peaks right around your midsection. So basically, if you just did a bunch of standard measurements, so take your forearm, you know, at its thickest point, your bicep right in the middle of your upper arm, your Adonis measurements, so your shoulder, your waist, your thigh, maybe go like, I don't know, a standard 8 to 10 inches above your knee and just make that your standard thigh measurement and your calves. And you took all those measurements regularly. And then, you know, you started on your weight training, your muscle building program with the amount of calories you have just been eating that haven't been making you gain or lose weight. So that's your baseline. That's your starting. And then take all those measurements and then start your muscle building program. And every, you know, 3 to 4 weeks, redo the measurements. If nothing's really changing and your waist is staying the same and all your muscles are, you know, muscle measurements are staying the same, and you feel like you want to test more calories, you can put some more calories in. So, I don't know, increase your daily calories by, you know, 500 or something. So to not, you know, from a practical standpoint, that doesn't, you know, I wouldn't expect you to measure them. Just, you know, throw in another meal or just, you know, start. The easy way to know that you're eating 500 more is just throw in a big protein shake that's got, you know, however many grams of protein plus some fruit or milk or something. And, you know, it's easy to calibrate those to be 500 more. So just do what you're normally doing plus one of those. And that's how you know you've gone up 500. And then if 4 weeks later your measurements are changing, all of the peripheral measurements, so your arms, your legs, your shoulders, but your waist has stayed the same, well, that's telling you that basically all of those muscle groups are getting bigger. Now, your waist might fluctuate with those, without putting on fat, your waist still might get a little bigger because you're also putting muscle around your waist. But, you know, it should be proportional to everything else if you're doing a proportioned workout where everything's kind of going, you're hitting all the muscles kind of in the similar proportions. And now, but if your waist is growing out of proportion to everything else, like it's getting bigger and you can kind of tell you're losing, you know, and do a visual thing here too, like make mental note of the definition you can see in the mirror. And if your waist is starting really to get bigger and smooth out and even your arms and everything else is starting to smooth out too and your legs, then clearly that extra calories is just turned into fat. So, you know, that's the simplest practical way to do it. I mean, just, and most people don't do this. Like, you know, take your measurements. Everyone looks at themselves in the mirror, but also take your measurements. And then if, you know, the measuring tape won't lie. And if you're getting heavier, but, you know, you're looking smoother in the mirror and your measurements aren't, you know, your arms and legs measurements aren't changing to the same rate that your waist is changing, you know, what else could it be but that you're gaining fat? I mean, without actually having a metabolic lab and machines to test body fat, that's the simplest, most practical way. And I mean, it's obvious when you look at yourself, you're like, oh, you know, you're smoother or you're tighter, your waist is bigger or it's not. So, and that's a pretty good measure for guys because most guys just store their fat in their waist anyways.
Okay. So if a guy is not gaining any muscle or anything like that, and granted, I mean, we're talking about obviously a slower process than, you know, some people might be, might want, so to say, and based on other things like you were talking about. I mean, what would be the first place to actually start if they weren't gaining? Let's say if they're working out and I guess that's the problem because you really don't know how a person's working out. I guess that maybe that'd be the first spot. I mean, what would be the plan of attack?
Well, I mean, you would follow some kind of system that's meant to build muscle. The first plan of attack is getting on a regular workout routine that and not missing your workouts. Your body follows like a very, if there's an underlying theme to the way your body functions, it just wants to be how it is right now. It doesn't, building muscle is a massive tax to your body. Like that's really forcing it to grow when there's no really necessity for it to grow that big. So the workouts have to be consistent and they have to progressively get tougher, and that's why it's called progressive resistance training. That's workouts. You can't just keep doing the same workout over and over again. Like literally every couple of weeks, you have to be doing more. You have to be doing more work, meaning either more volume or more weight and more volume, or doing it all more frequently. And you just have to keep doing more. Otherwise, however much you did this week, if you just keep doing that next week, there's no stimulus to force your body to change. And unless you're tracking all of this, or unless you have there's no way to know if you're doing more. You can't necessarily rely on how you feel, because in the gym, what feels doable and what feels like, oh, that was a decent workout, typically isn't enough. it kind of has to be just outside your comfort zone almost all the time. And that's how you know you're pushing your body to force it to grow to the next level. Kind of listening to your body is the worst thing you can do, because it's always going to tell you to stop. It's always going to say, whoa, that's enough. But when you go through a tough workout and you really push yourself and, you know, you're looking at the page, you're like, damn it, I got another set to go still. That's when you know you're pushing it beyond what, you know, pushing yourself to the level that's going to force more growth. So yeah, I mean, I guess the starting point is a consistent workout that forces you to progress. And then from there, then you can scale up the amount of work you're doing and then keep taking your measurements. All you can really do is the work in the gym and refer back to your measurements. And then if you're not getting any result at all, you have to scale up the intensity or scale up the volume or, you know, scale up all three, intensity, volume, and frequency with your workouts. And I guess part of it's eventually accepting the fact that your whatever given size you begin with is going to dictate how big you can actually get. Like endomorphs, ectomorphs, and mesomorphs all have a different growth potential. Like, you know, tall, thin, skinny guys just don't have the growth potential that thicker guys do. It doesn't mean you can't grow. It just means given the same workout, the thicker guy is going to grow bigger than you will if you're like a slender built guy. You both will grow on the same workout. He'll just probably grow faster than the big guy. The guy who starts bigger is literally has more clay to mold. He'll just be able to take those muscles and make them bigger. Whereas the guy that's starting with thinner, slender muscles, he can still make them bigger, but only based on what he started with. Did I answer the question?
Right. So it's kind of, you know, it's kind of all based on initial conditions, for lack of a better term.
And to some degree, managing expectations. I don't really like referring to the different, like, somatotypes like endo, ecto, and meso, but you kind of do have to eventually accept where you started and realize you really can't jump the spectrum. Like, if you're clearly a very thin type of guy, like slender muscle type of guy, you're just not going to be able to work your way out all the way to being a huge thick guy. You can be bigger for your somatotype, but you're just not going to jump the spectrum. Like, there's a reason why, you know, wide receivers and defensive backs are wide receivers and defensive backs and they're not linemen, because they just don't have the body to ever get that big in the first place. Like, they could train forever. They could even do as much drugs as they want. They're just not going to become big, giant mountains of men. Whereas those big, giant guys, they're never going to have the shape and the proportions of a wide receiver type of guy, because they're already starting with way more mass. So you can't jump from one to the other. You can just be bigger for the type you already are. Does that make sense?
Right. So, okay. So, just kind of throwing some things around. So let's say if somebody's like a really skinny dude or whatever, and in order to force himself to grow, you were saying obviously he has to increase the intensity and things like that. I mean, would that mean, obviously, I mean, more food? I mean, I'm talking about massive amounts, but, you know, we talked about, you know, 250 to 500 calories maybe. I mean, because obviously just the exercise itself would, that much intensity would probably burn maybe 250 more a day, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, but it's not burning it from muscle, it's burning it from fat. So you wouldn't necessarily need very many more calories, if any at all. That's where you'd have to do a test. You'd have to add, you know, start with just the food you're eating now. Don't bother adding anything, because you need your baseline test. Mm-hmm. You know, do your workouts. But you have to be consistent with your workouts. Don't, like, cheat yourself, because if you're not doing it, the first thing to do before you even mess around with food is to do enough working out and do it intensely enough to really tell you, you know, to really give yourself a good gauge that, oh man, like, I couldn't possibly do any more work in the gym. And then only at that point would you start looking at food to see if food does anything. And then from there, slowly increase your calories. And then along the way, use your visuals, you know, use the mirror as a way to tell if you're getting smoother or staying the same leanness. And then use all the various measurements I just told you about to see if you're getting bigger or not. And then if all the extra food's doing is making your waist bigger and the rest of your measurements are staying static, Well, then that's your indication right there that it's you just need longer time in the gym. You just need to let it go longer to actually start growing more, but you can't accelerate it by eating more food. Now, the one other thing I will say is instead of just taking the standard measurements I mentioned, you may notice that your muscle bellies get fuller across the whole length of the muscle. So if you, like for instance, like let's say you're doing your forearm measurement up near your elbow at the thickest part of your forearm. Well, as you work out and as you're getting bigger, let's say maybe that particular spot on your forearm measurement may not go up right away, but maybe 2 or 3 inches further down, maybe that area becomes more, becomes bigger and thicker, and that area might actually get bigger. So given the muscles in that area, at its widest point, that point might not get bigger, but it actually might get bigger further down, which the muscle's still getting bigger. It's just that you need to kind of measure all parts of the muscle to see how much bigger it's really getting. And that's one thing you may notice. You may notice that overall, like certain angles, like the sweep of your thigh, like down near the knee versus up at its thickest part, it might get bigger down there too. So the measurement 10 inches above your knee might not change right away, but the measurement 6 inches above your knee might actually get bigger. And so that's another way of assessing. So you actually do want to take measurements sort of all over, because as the muscle belly gets larger, it gets larger across the full length of the muscle. And some people might not realize that is another way to track growth. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I mean, but is that going to be more person-specific or workout-specific or both?
It'll be a little bit of both. Like, everyone's muscles are shaped slightly different. Like, we clearly all have the same muscles. Like, all humans have the same muscles. But we don't have the same thickness or length of muscle belly. We don't have the same tendon insertion or where how long the tendon is itself. So you see some people who had their bicep just, it seems like it goes like all the way down right to their elbow, and there's like muscle mass like right up till the elbow. And then some guys seem like it stops way above the elbow, and there's like a big space between their bicep and the elbow. And that's just person to person variability. We all still have a bicep, but the length of the bicep versus how long its tendon is has some variability, and that'll change the way it looks. And incidentally, that also changes its strength. That's why some guys have super strong arms and other guys' arms aren't as strong, even though they're about the same size and they lift, they do the same type of lifting, routine. So little tiny variations in where tendons insert on the bone also change how strong that joint is. And incidentally, that'll change how well the muscle responds to the exercise. That's why we added in body part specific stuff in our routines, because, me and Brad Pilon, we respond completely differently to a bench press. Like, me and him can do the same bench press routine, and I'll get more shoulder and tricep work out of it, and he'll get more chest work out of it. And it's, we're doing the same number of reps, we're lying on the same bench, and just the way his shoulders sit versus the way my shoulders sit on our bone frames are just the way we're shaped, for some reason, there's nothing I can do to make the bench press work as good on my chest as it does for him. But on the same note, so when we do shoulders, I get more response out of shoulder pressing than he does. So I'm just kind of a shoulder dominant sort of shape, and he's a chest dominant sort of shape. And so that's another thing you have to pay attention to from body part specific training.
Right. Yeah. And I guess eventually it'll get there, but again, we're still kind of talking about initial conditions of where you start. You know, let's go into kind of end game after you've been training a while. You know, most bodybuilders, even natural bodybuilders or whatever, they kind of all look the same on stage. But that's kind of after, I don't know, that's kind of like the final point, I guess you would say. But they all started differently, and it probably took them all different amounts of time to get to that same point, wouldn't you say?
Yeah. So, as awkward as this sounds, bodybuilders are probably the best test subjects for proving how big and how much you can change your muscle mass. So in a scientific study, you want to control for as many variables that as you can, just to see the one thing that you're looking at. And so unless you're – so bodybuilders basically when they're on stage have more or less the same amount of body fat. Like if they're in condition, they've all of them have cut their body fat down to a level that's within a few percent of each other. So you can say that, okay, so they've all controlled for their body fat. They all probably follow some kind of similar muscle building routine, so they're all like putting in quite a few hours and at a high intensity, lifting heavy weights, you know, very consistently. So they're all probably following some very similar muscle building style routine. And, you know, natural or not, they're all probably following the same kind of drug routine. So basically all your variables are controlled for. They're all doing the same stuff. And then when they get on stage, they're all very similar to each other. They're like, you know, if you ever look through a bodybuilding magazine or seen like coverage of a show, they're almost indistinguishable one guy from the next. I mean, the way the judges are nitpicking at like little bits here and there to see who's like going to win. And so the only difference is the starting material. If like a guy like Schwarzenegger was a pretty big guy to begin with, whereas a guy like Frank Zane was a thin guy to begin with, and you know, all the training and drugs in the world is never going to make Frank Zane as big as thick and as big and with as big muscle bellies as Schwarzenegger. There's just no way he could get to that size. So even adding in drugs, you still can't take a skinny guy and make him as big as a guy who started with thicker muscles to begin with. So I mean, as weird of a way of explaining it, bodybuilders are a really good example because they're a test subject that have controlled for basically every variable. And, you know, given the same training, the same conditioning, the same amount of drugs, the guys who start off with bigger muscles end up with bigger muscles, and the guys that start with smaller muscles, you know, thinner body type, just end up with, you know, smaller muscles. Even though they've built them, they just can't build them as big as the bigger guys do, and that's it. And then everywhere in between. And we got just another note: the somatotypes, the, you know, endo, ecto, and mesomorphs. That's a very general categorization scheme. Nobody actually is any one. There's very few people, let me say it this way, that are clearly defined as any one of those very strictly. I mean, every now and then you'll see a guy who's like Reggie Miller, the basketball player, or Kevin Durant. Like, those guys are tall and thin and skinny, and that's just how they're built. And it's no mistaking that's their shape. And then every now and then you have, you know, a huge, big, really thick guy, and it's super clear that that's how they're built. And then all the rest of us are some combination of all three in the middle. Like, we're ranging in the middle. Some guys are, you know what I mean? Like, not everyone's falls exactly into those somatotypes as you would be thinking in your head. So, we're all some various spot on the spectrum, with starting material, so to speak. And so everyone's growth potential is slightly different. So comparing yourself to other people isn't the smartest thing either, because, well, you need to be comparing yourself to somebody else who's exactly in your same starting body shape and size.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. I don't even know if we've really come up with an answer here. I think one of the things is, managing expectations. Like, I guess based on what I just said, you can't look over at another guy and be like, well, if he's that big, I want to be that big. You that just doesn't work, because if you're not starting with the same material, you either are setting your expectations too high. And another guy who's starting off very, very lean, and it seems like effortless for him to stay super lean, you can't just be like, well, how is he so lean, and why do I have to do so much work to get as lean as him? That's on the same note. You probably have bigger muscles than he does. You can probably build easier, bigger muscles easier than him, but it takes you a little bit longer to cut down. So it's all about where you're starting.
Yeah. You know what? Let's talk about this real quick. And then that'll probably be it for today. Let's talk about before and after pictures and some of the things that, you know, because you see them on different websites and supplement ads and things like that. And you know, you see some pretty dramatic transformations as far as muscle building. Like, fat loss is different because it's like you can just rip fat off pretty much. I mean, but, you know, with muscle, you see guys like they're claiming these huge, you know, amounts of gains and stuff like that, and I don't know, man. Some of it just doesn't seem right. based on what we've been talking about? I mean, are there some insider secrets there that people just don't know about when it comes to before and after pictures, or what?
Yeah, a lot of people don't realize that in, I'm not going to name any names, but many of them, that the people are on drugs, and I know that 100% for sure. So when you see, you know, 40, 50 pounds of muscle gained in like, you know, 6 months or some ridiculously short amount of time, you're typically looking at a guy who's using, like the guy in the ads, typically on like a significant amount of steroids and other drugs. So it's, you know, growth hormones, stuff like that. So, you know, don't kid, you know, unless you're going to use the same drugs, you know, you aren't getting those gains. Don't kid yourself. So that's a major confounding variable in like all of the before and afters you'll see in most mainstream magazines and publications like that. As far as the sort of online world, the digital world of that stuff, I can't necessarily comment on those ones because the magazine stuff I'm aware of because I used to work in the supplement industry and I was very aware of which athletes and how much, you know, and who's using what kind of, you know, drugs and that sort of thing. In the digital world, I'm not really sure about the testimonials people send in, but those are, you can't control for those either, right? If like, you know, if somebody mailed in a picture, a before and after picture that was using our program and, you know, said they put on 30 pounds of muscle, I wasn't there to see if the guy was using drugs or not. I would be very skeptical about anyone who put that much on, knowing what I know about, you know, with the research we're doing on muscle building, I would believe that's next to impossible. So I guess it's a slight leap of faith. The other thing you can do is just look at the picture and does the guy look smoother and, you know, I don't want to say fatter, but does he look less lean? And if he's, you know, it's conceivable to put on 20, 30 pounds, and not look terrible in the after, but look a lot smoother. And, you know, a good 10, 15 of that could just be water retention and some fat. And so what? Who cares if you get heavier on the scale? Like, what's the point of making a scale? What's the point of making the needle on the scale move if you don't really look any better, but you're heavier? And the other thing in a before and after you may not notice is, like we were just discussing this earlier, legs, 50% of your muscle mass, 51% of your muscle mass is in your legs. So it's your hips, your butt, and your legs. Guys don't show off how thick their legs get in before and afters. Everyone's just looking at your upper body. So if you didn't really, you know, you could actually have a big weight gain, and a lot of that just comes from your legs, you know, growing. So, but who cares? Like, when was the last time big, thick legs were all that impressive? If your actually legs get too big, it might throw off the look of the rest of your body because you end up with this kind of weird, huge base that throws off how big your upper body looks. So, you know, guys who have tendencies to build big legs or starting with big legs don't need to really do much work to make them any bigger, if at all, because it makes your upper body look smaller. So there's kind of not too many of us have to worry about that, but, you know, certain guys just have big legs, and that can really throw off the look of your upper body. It can kind of make you look, you know, triangular-ish, where you're bigger on the bottom and smaller on top, and that's like that's the opposite of what we're kind of going for. So, you know, actually in some cases, those guys have to do even more work to make their upper body more impressive when they're stuck on such big legs. So yeah, I mean, the before and afters, pay really close attention to them. Does the guy look smoother and, you know, watery and kind of fatter in the after? And if so, is that what you're after? Like, do you actually want to be bigger but only look good in a t-shirt? And, you know, when you take it off, it's like, well, yeah, you're heavier, but you're smoother.
Right. And I guess the other thing, too, to kind of keep in mind is that nobody ever puts, from what I ever noticed, nobody ever puts an average person. They never put, like, the top-end results and then, like, well, this is the top-end results. They always put the thing at the bottom that says, you know, and they have to, that results aren't typical, number one, which that kind of sucks ass because that's kind of what you're trying to imply, that this is what's going to happen to you, yet results aren't typical. Nobody ever really puts the whole, you know, well, here's a typical result right here. Here's the average guy, what you're going to see. This is kind of the reality. And then if you don't follow the program or system or whatever it is, then this is kind of where you're going to be down here. So there's, I don't know.
Yeah. Oh yeah. They definitely in the offline, in mainstream magazines, fitness and bodybuilding magazines, you know, we have, like, by law, we have to do that. Like, otherwise, the Federal Trade Commission and the other watchdog agencies that where companies monitor each other and keep each other honest, they'll just call each other out. They'll be like, that's BS. Like, that's not what the average person will get. So it'll say right there, results not typical. But for the wow factor, most people don't read the fine print, right? So they'll be like, wow, that, and everyone's cognitive dissonance, everyone's sort of little internal lie they're telling themselves is they're like, yeah, but I'll be like that guy. I'll be the other exception to the rule. Like, I'll be just like the guy in the picture. Like, everyone else is average, but not me. It's kind of an ego thing. So even if you do read that, you're going to want to say to yourself, yeah, but I'll be the next star. Like, I'll be in the next ad. And the hardest pill to swallow is to accept the fact that you're probably not one of those guys that's on the fringe and will be the next guy in the ad. You're probably more in the average. And it doesn't mean you can't look, like, fantastic. And it doesn't mean you can't have a phenomenal change. It just means that yours might not look like the one in the magazine, right? So, like, you're kind of lumped in the middle where the rest of us are. Like, we're all kind of in the middle. And then you get, like, a freak that looks really – that just has a ridiculous change, and that's the guy you put in the ad because you want the wow factor in the ad. It's kind of like there's – it's like pro athletes. Like, lots of pro athletes are sort of, like, you know, interchangeable, and then, you know, a Herschel Walker comes along or a Bo Jackson who's just that much bigger, stronger, faster than everybody, and he's just better. And it's like, why is he so much better? Like, they're all pros. They all do the same training. They all have the same coaching. But when you've got a guy who's just genetically gifted, nobody can catch him. There's no training up to catch a guy like that. He's just better. So the same thing in the fitness industry. Every now and then you've got, like, lightning in a bottle with a guy who just responds. He looks great. He puts on, like, maybe more weight than the average guy could ever put on. And you're just like, Jesus, that's the one going in the ad.
Yeah, exactly. And the other thing, too, we talked about this a long time ago, but, you know, what about the people that are actually representing products and services or even testimonials that don't even use a product or service? And I know you've had experience with this, but I just saw this the other day, just in the dating niche, this guy had this thing up, this casting call for actors, and he was just looking for people to record just saying that his product was the shit. I mean, just actors, not people who've actually used it, but just actors in general, just walking around. So, I mean, that's out there as well.
Yeah, I mean, that's the other thing. You don't really have a whole lot of proof that these people actually even did what they say they did. So it's a bit of a leap of faith, you know, unless you can actually talk to the person in person, you'd never really know. I would say that the more big name people, that happens more with, in general, people are honest, and sure, and most people aren't going to give a testimonial. People have a problem with lying like that, right? But it only seems like I mean, the normal average person who isn't a celebrity, isn't being paid to endorse the product. Just the average person who actually used the workout and used or whatever product, they're like, man, that worked. Like, people just email us in randomly and say, hey, that stuff was great. People volunteer it. When someone actually changes their life or a product actually does something, people are totally willing to volunteer the information. And they're like, man, that was cool. Like, they actually want to tell us. Like, you know, we get, you know, Brad, you know that we get guys that email back in with our system, and they're like, I had to tell you, like, this and this happened. Like, I got this change. Like, people are excited when something really works. So, and the average consumer, is honest, and they won't necessarily feel comfortable if their image is up on, like, one of our websites or anywhere and in a magazine and it's dishonest, because they know that it's not right. So the average person's probably not going to be, a scammer like that. Whereas celebrities who have publicists, and, you know, they're not really emotionally attached to it, and their publicists and lawyers are like, well, wait a minute, you know, how much money are we making on this deal? Where's their likeness going to be? Does it fit into the media perception we're trying to build around this celebrity for this, you know, this year? Because maybe they're just coming out of a divorce, or maybe they just had a bad movie, or maybe they're riding a high of a good movie and they can't afford to tarnish that celebrity's image right now. Or maybe we're trying to make the celebrity look like, like a little bit of a badass this year, or maybe we're trying to make them look like more, more approachable and compassionate this year. All of this shit goes into, pardon my language, all of this goes into what the publicist is working with the celebrity's image for that year. So the celebrity's image needs to be very controlled. So you don't know what a celebrity's like. You just see what their publicist and their publicist team wants you to think they are. And they'll only endorse products that fit into that sort of avatar. And so when I worked with some other companies that made various products, we had some deals with some celebrities, and that was the way it went down. Like the products could only, we'd only get a celebrity on board if our product fit the public image that they were working on for that celebrity for that year. And they, you know, they'll, and, you know, it was right in some of their contracts that they weren't even going to take the product, but they still endorsed it. So I would say the bigger, higher profile the person is endorsing it, the less chance that they actually even touch the product or even know anything about it. Whereas you're just grassroots person who's just sort of like, hey, you know, I used that thing and it worked. You know, the guy who just seems like the guy who lives next to you, or, you know, looks just like one of your drinking buddies. What's he have to gain or lose by, he has nothing to gain by saying that besides the fact that he's just a genuine person and wants to share a story. So, I mean, without knowing these people personally, that would be the way I would assess it. The bigger, higher profile person is, I would say, just less trustworthy. In a before and after, in an endorsement, because they obviously are a commodity to sell.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
not the
person is less trustworthy, but the whole endorsement itself.
Yeah, no, I'm not saying the person themselves. Like, yeah, no, if celebrity X or Y is endorsing something, they don't even know, man. You don't call them. You never get them on the phone. You get their publicist on the phone.
Right.
And which is an even bigger trick, because let's just say celebrity X or Y actually did use the product and actually really did like it. You would never really know if it's genuine or not, because, you know, it's been spoiled by the number of times and the number of celebrities who didn't, and it was just a good deal. It was worth, you know, $2-3 million for that endorsement. So it's confounded. So you'd never be able to pick out which celebrity endorsement was genuine.
Interesting.
But the average person's never has nothing to gain from it besides they're just, you know, people have an intrinsic need to help each other out if it's available. So, you know, if they could just give some, you know, be like, give their story. It feels good to know that your story helps somebody, so people will, you know, willingly give it.
Yeah, you're seeing the landscape change a lot now with a lot of the social media stuff like Twitter and Facebook and other things like that, where people actually can give more active testimonials and also kind of, and I'm not even saying just being keyboard jockeys that just bash any and everything, because I'm not really seeing that, but I'll tell you what really is interesting, and I don't know if you heard this, but I think it was in the movie Bruno. They said that, and this is totally sidestepping this, but, you know, what we're kind of talking about, just kind of bringing something home. They said that movie right there might be the first movie that social media killed. And, you know, where people basically, because of that Friday, you know, it opened up to, you know, just killer numbers and everything like that. And then Saturday, Sunday, and Monday, you know, when they're supposed to carry through, the numbers drop dramatically, and and a lot of people are, crediting that to like Twitter and Facebook, where people, after they went and saw the movie, they were just on these sites being like, oh, I didn't like it that much, or, you know, or just really whatever, some part of the movie that just kind of ticked them off, because it was kind of a risque type movie, just kind of went in and just, I'm not going to say bashed it, but just did very active recommendations to all their friends and followers and stuff, and it totally just killed the next day. So we're starting to see a lot of that stuff happen right now. So it's good to know that, I mean, if you're pitching a product or service that's kind of scam-like, I mean, it's going to be found out sooner than later now. But I found that to be really interesting.
No, well, yeah, and that's a perfect example. So, and people will tend to believe other people who seem to have nothing to gain. So,
sure,
you know, yeah. just a random person saying, hey, I watched it, I don't like it, you know.
Yeah, there's a thing I heard from Evan Pagan or whatever. I was at a seminar, and he was saying that that nowadays there's this thing called twin-suming, where it's not necessarily that somebody's looking for an expert to give an endorsement or whatever on a product or service. That's actually what somebody's looking for Like if you're going through Amazon or whatever and you're looking at all the reviews or whatever and you're reading them all, you're really looking for the person who seems just like you. And that's the person you're going to believe. All the rest of them don't matter. It's the person who's most similar to you in your situation. And how they responded to said product or services, that's going to matter to you the most. So.
Well, that makes perfect sense. Are you going to take your mother's opinion on like a comedy? You know, you're going to ask your buddies, your drinking buddies. You're like, hey, was that funny? So.
That's true. So. All right. Well, you got anything else, man? We kind of sidestepped as usual, but.
No, yeah, we kind of went off track there. I think that's good for today. If anybody has questions, I guess where would they ask these on the blog?
Just put them in the comments section and we'll get to them.
Yeah. I mean, this thing could have turned into a semester's worth of information on how muscle building and nutrition works, because that's just such a hot topic and such a confusing topic. And I would guess that we're going to actually break this thing down into parts and probably go deeper into each part. But definitely want to hear from you guys on the comment section and on the blog, and then let us know what parts we hit that made sense and what parts still need more clarification.
Yeah, because that's the whole point. I mean, we're basically just kind of starting the conversation here, and you guys just chime in and put what you want to know. And, you know, if there's something that seems a little inconsistent with something else, I mean, that's not a problem. We'll sword fight it off for you, and then that's about all I've got on that.
All right, then. Well, I think that's good for this week.
Sweet, man. All right, man. Chat later.
All right, later.